Good morning. Good morning, members.
Morning, Chairperson.
Yeah.
Morning, Chair.
Yeah, that's better. The agenda has been flighted. The assumption I'm making is that we do have a quorum enough to continue.
Yes, Chairperson.
Okay. Morning, colleagues. I'm under the tree is somewhere in the bush, so I will immediately remove my camera. I'm not sure whether I'm visible. I should be visible, visible, I think. Yeah?
You are visible.
Oh, if I am, then thank you very much. Good morning, everybody else. And let me switch off because I'm under the tree, so I might show you the trees. The agenda is before us. It is, as is, it has got 8 items. Which is opening, observe, apologies, up to opening remarks. I want to welcome everybody into the meeting and wish everybody good deliberations into the meeting. I know that we have been a bit off the meetings. Most of us, some of us were not necessarily off in any way, but officially we're a bit off. Let's welcome one another back into the meeting. I know that we have committed ourselves to go to oversight committees and meetings. I think we need to go to this oversight. For instance, in the Giani one, people were marching and so forth and so on. We still owe answers on a number of oversights that we visited, like your Eastern Cape, your Lesotho, and the others. I think we need to really work towards giving handover reports, because we are now preparing for an exit report that we must give. So our work should now be very much outcome-based, because we are supposed to be giving over to others that will take over from us as and when elections have come into being, more especially because it is about the time that we are going to go for elections. Having said that, can you observe a moment of silence for mediation or prayer? Thank you very much. We are all welcome. Apologies, Nosipo.
Morning, Chairperson. There's no apology submitted.
Thank you for that commitment, members. We are now on item 4, briefing by the Auditor General of South Africa on audit outcomes of the department and entities for 2021-2022 financial year. And I want to ask that to allow that we be given the briefing of the two reports before we engage the reports, because it might take time for us to talk to one, engage, then the second one engage. It will take us time. Do I get your support that we get item 4 and item 5, then we engage later?
Agreed, Chair.
Auditor General, we are in your hands.
morning, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, and to the other colleagues that have joined us on the call. My name is Jolene Pillay. I'm the senior manager that's responsible for the audit of the department. Before I start with the presentation, I'd like to introduce my colleagues that are joining me today. With me, I have the senior manager that's responsible for the audits of WTE and TCGA. His name is Tindani Musunyiwa. And I've also got with me our product champion, Sylvia Bele, who's joining us today. And our parliamentary liaison officer, Isongezo Makula, that you might already be familiar with. He has reminded me that I should indicate to the members that the questionnaire will be submitted to all of the members during the course of the meeting to get some feedback from you as to whether you found the session to be useful or not. So just a reminder that that will be coming. Thank you. I'm going to then move over to the presentation. Our presentation was shared with the committee members together with the briefing document. The briefing document is intended to be supplementary information. So today I will focus then on the presentation of the slides that were shared with you.
Agreed.
Thank you, Chair. Just moving on to the slides. Okay. We start off with the mission and vision of the Auditor General, which states that the Auditor General of South Africa has a constitutional mandate, and as the supreme audit institution of South Africa, it exists to strengthen our country's democracy by enabling oversight, accountability, and governance in the public sector through auditing, thereby building public confidence. I think at this point, I would just like to reflect a little bit on our mission, because it is such an important part of the foundation that drives our strategic aspirations as an office. In terms of the constitutional mandate, Section 188 of the Constitution defines the functions of the Auditor General and indicates that it is responsible for auditing and reporting on the accounts, financial statements, and financial management of the public sector. As the only audit institution mandated to perform these functions, it is regarded as the supreme audit institution of South Africa. The Auditor General strengthens our country's democracy by contributing to the quality of life and well-being of South Africans through enabling oversight, accountability, and governance in the public sector. In this respect, for the year under review, we have continued to focus on the lived experience of the citizens. The Auditor General continues to demonstrate this by performing independent quality audits to assess the executive government's compliance with applicable laws and its use of public resources, which ultimately affects the public sector's ability to effectively deliver public services and therefore impacts on the stability and strength of South Africa's constitutional democracy. The Auditor General also enables accountability and good governance in the sector by helping the legislature and any other relevant authority as the representatives of the people of South Africa to oversee the executive, government, and public entities on national, provincial, and local spheres. The engagements that we have with the Portfolio Committee, especially our engagements with you on the annual BRRR sessions, are therefore extremely important as we see this as an important part of us assisting you with your oversight responsibilities. And as the Auditor General, we will continue to work on making our reports more relevant so that a wide range of stakeholders can use its reports to understand how effectively South African resources are being used. So we will strive to communicate our audit findings to the people of South Africa in order to build confidence. Okay, so that in essence is our foundation in determining or driving our strategic aspiration. With our 21-22 audits, we have expanded the work that we have been doing on the sector, and we've identified specific areas in the water sector to enhance our the relevance of our reporting to you. And we will explain what those areas are as we go through the slides. Maybe just in respect of the water sector, from the AG perspective, we've identified that the importance of the water sector cannot be overemphasized in our developing country. We know SDG 6, Sustainable Development Goal 6, requires that we strive to ensure availability and sustainable management of water and sanitation for all. And our constitution specifically requires that all citizens have the basic right of access to sufficient water and requires the state to take reasonable measures within its available resources.
Mrs. Pillay?
Thank you,
Jim. Do you want to move your slide with you, because you seem to be far away from the vision and mission now. Okay, there we are.
Okay. Thank you, Chief.
That's fine.
Okay. So with the next slide, we are moving towards the value chain that we have developed with for the water sector. As part of our aspiration, we have committed to providing deeper insights into the water sector and the achievement of service delivery objectives, also highlighting any challenges that are experienced. So in developing this value chain, we have identified, and you will see at the top of your screen, that the Department of Water and Sanitation is ultimately responsible for the provision of water services within South Africa, and it has a very important oversight responsibility with respect to all of the other entities that make up part of the sector. So therefore, they are included in the top. The Water Research Commission plays a very important role in supporting the department in the various research initiatives that may become necessary across all of the different spheres of the water sector. The Department of Water and Sanitation is also responsible for ensuring that the country's water resources are protected, used, developed, conserved, managed, and controlled through regulating and supporting the delivery of effective water supply and sanitation. So if we look at our value chain, you'll see that it stretches across national governments through to local municipalities. We've divided our value chain into four specific segments. The first relates to resource management and development, where the key we've noted, essentially the department is responsible for resource management and development, but is supported in this respect by the catchment management agencies and the related water user associations. We've also noted intergovernmental arrangements, being the Komati Basin Water Authority, the Lesotho Highlands Water Project, and the Orange Sengu River Commission. In the second segment, we've identified an important component being resource development, bulk infrastructure, and distribution, where TCTA and WTE play a major role. They are responsible for the bulk infrastructure, the investment therein, and the maintenance thereof to ensure that there is distribution of raw water resources through to the nine water boards, which will now become eight. But essentially, they are then responsible for ensuring that water is then provided to the water boards. We've noted there that there are strategic customers to these two entities, which is the agricultural sector as well as Eskom. With the third component, we've identified the bulk infrastructure and distribution related to water boards. So water boards also play an integral role in getting water through to customers. Their role, however, relates to acquiring the water from the WTE, processing and sanitizing the water through their their water treatment works, and then distributing clean water through to local municipalities, noting that they also service some of the companies in the mining and the manufacturing sector. These three areas and the entities that fall within these components fall under the direct control of the department and the minister. The fourth component of the distribution of water relates to local municipalities, where the water boards will supply water to the municipalities, who will then also eventually distribute to customers, and they will follow a process of extraction. They will store and treat the water, and then they will distribute it to the end user or the customers in this respect. They are also responsible for the reuse of water, the collection, the treatment, and then the disposal as is necessary. So those are essentially then the responsibilities of the various role players in the water sector. In looking at this water sector for the 2021-22 financial year, as the Auditor General, we have identified specific focus areas being the management and maintenance of infrastructure, water quality, and water losses. And then from our audits, we've identified some critical matters that we will be bringing to your attention. So apologies that it seems like a lot of information, but I think just our extension of work that we've done from the normal audit work that we've done to the more service delivery orientated work has necessitated that we have a few more slides that we would like to talk to. So, also looking at the value chain, what is important that we will continue to discuss in terms of roles and responsibilities is that there are some complexities in the water sector, in the sense that the local municipalities do not report directly to the Department of Water and Sanitation. So the reporting structure is slightly complex, and because of that, the challenges that are experienced throughout the sector become a little bit more difficult to deal with, which essentially requires more cooperation between the different spheres of government, so that the challenges in water distribution from source through to the end user can be dealt with in the most effective way. And that essentially then leads us to the next slide that I would like to discuss with you. I won't go through all of the detail in terms of roles and responsibilities, but I will then move on to the slide on the accountability ecosystem. Our message here essentially is that everyone has a role to play in the national government accountability ecosystem. When we look at the ecosystem, essentially, we are saying that if we look at a government, there's essentially two sides to it. The first relates to the portfolio itself, where we're saying that within the portfolio of the department and its entities, there are various role players that are responsible for contributing towards the service delivery objectives, and it is important that all of them play their role sufficiently to be able to achieve the bigger objectives of service delivery. So right from officials of the department through to executive authority, it is important that everyone plays their role. On the right-hand side of the slide, we refer to support and oversight structures, where we've noted the importance of the national executive leadership. We've also identified a significant role to be played by National Treasury, Public Service Administration, Planning, Monitoring, and Evaluation, as well as coordinating departments. For the water sector, we've identified the COPTA as being a significant role player in that area because of the responsibility that they have to ensure that the municipalities are adequately performing according to their mandate. In terms of the support structures, we've also identified Parliament being for portfolio committees and scopers being significant role players in the ecosystem. If I move to the middle of the slide, we essentially there would indicate what the responsibilities of the Auditor General is, as we said. So as the Auditor General, we do provide insights through our audit process. We gather insights, we report our findings, and we make recommendations thereon. In terms of influence, our audit findings and recommendations are communicated to leadership, executive authority, and oversight structures with the intention to obtain commitments. And through our processes, we and the commitments obtained, we will continue to then review the actions that are taken by management in terms of the process of enforcement. That will include the monitoring of the commitments, follow-up of our audit findings, and reporting again to oversight structures such as yourself. Noting that in the bottom of the slide, we expect that there will be an indirect impact on the active citizenry, where our findings will be indirectly communicated to the citizens. In terms of our observations during the audit, we noted that it is extremely important that the water sector, led by the department, works together with the supporting departments to ensure that there's improvements in the delivery of basic services to our end users, which is where we find a lot of challenges in terms of service delivery. So thank you, Pierre. With that, the next section that I'm going to talk to then is the audit outcomes for the 2021 and 21-22 year. With this slide, we essentially provide a snapshot of the outcomes. We start off with the 2017-18 year being the first year of administration as we have it. So with the portfolio that we're talking to for this particular cycle, it's the four entities. It's WRC, TCTA, WTE, and the department itself. With the 2017-18 year, we had two qualified audits with findings being DWS and WTE, and we had one unqualified with findings from TCTA and one clean audit with WRC. If we fast forward then to 2021, we noted some improvements in that year in the sense that WTE had moved to unqualified with findings, so there was an improvement. And in the 21-22 financial year, we have three entities being DWS, WTE, and TCTA as unqualified with findings, and WRC still managing to retain their clean audit status for this year. With the next slide, we provide a little bit of detail. With WRC, we must commend WRC for being able to maintain its clean audit opinion. We have noted strong financial and performance management reporting controls, which have assisted the entity to sustain its clean audit outcomes. For DWS, WTE, and TCTA, we note that they are unqualified with findings on compliance with legislation. WTE and TCTA have remained stagnant over the last 3 years in this space, and we note that the key issues that they struggle with relate to the submission of financial statements without errors, which has become a compliance matter that has been reported on. The prevention of irregular expenditure is still a concern, and then dealing with such irregular expenditure through an investigation and consequence management processes has also been a concern. So those are the three key areas that came through for a WTE TCTA. And also DWS in respect of its compliance matters. For the department, in 2021, the department was qualified on training expenditure and payables. During that year, the audit had identified a lack of proper reconciliations to ensure that payments was only made for services that were actually received. As these were training contracts, the issue was around the training of learners and whether those learners were actually trained. So we were unable to get adequate comfort that the payments that were made related to actual services that were received by the department, and that resulted in the qualification. During the 21-22 financial year, the department, through its implementing agent, had performed these necessary reconciliations and identified overpayments to the supplier. The department and its implementing agent are following an arbitration process at this point in time to recover the overpayments. Maybe just another key matter that we wanted to highlight as being significant in the portfolio is the issue of the royalties on the Lesotho Highlands Water Project. We note that the executive authority and the accounting officer must ensure that there are adequate and timely documentation supporting the Lesotho Highlands Water Project transactions, and this must be received on a monthly basis through the LHWC and the LHDA to ensure accurate and complete financial reporting and the system for credible and timely decision making. Okay, we then move on to the next section, which essentially relates to the audit of the annual performance report and our observations relating to the planning process. So the next three slides will talk to the planning processes and the annual performance report. Okay, we start off with the audit outcomes. For all four entities, we have not identified any material findings that have been reported in the audit report, so well done to the portfolio. We did, however, note when we look at the quality of the submission of the performance reports that three of the entities, WRC, WTE, and TCTA, provided us with reports that did not have any material corrections to them. So, you know, they remained without findings, but DWS did have a material matter that needed to be corrected that resulted in their outcome of no material findings. When we looked at the planning processes, we did consider whether the annual performance plan was complete in relation to the important service delivery matters that are described in key strategic documents. In that respect, we looked at the National Water and Sanitation Master Plan. We looked at the strategic plans and the medium-term strategic framework. We did identify that there was one key indicator in the MTSF that was not included in the annual performance plan of the department, that being the eradication of bucket sanitation system. The department had allocated an amount of 292 million from the regional bulk infrastructure grant for bucket eradication in Free State and Northern Cape, which is why it's surprising that it was omitted. What we had noted is that an amount of only 48.9 million or 17% of what was budgeted was actually spent, and there was no indicator essentially in the annual performance plan to reflect this performance. We'll continue to discuss the bucket eradication system with the next slide. But understanding that you know, this is quite a key indicator for the department. Okay, with the next slide, we look at the performance of DWS, TCTA, and WRC on an overall basis, noting that WTE do have targets, indicators and targets for that it is included in the annual performance plan of the department. So we haven't included them separately. We note that WRC has done extremely well to have achieved all of the targets that they had set for themselves. TCTA achieved 75% and the department achieved 66% of all of the targets that were set for the year. Also key to this analysis is the spending patterns. We noted that the department has had significant underspending, which has been emphasized in our audit report. The department materially underspent the budget by $2.5 billion, which included an amount of $2.1 million on Program 3, and that mainly related to underspending on the ARBIC grants for the year. Okay. Our key message here is that it is important for DWS and TCTA to conduct a full root cause analysis to determine what are the reasons for the non-achievement and then to develop a plan to ensure that they are able to improve this performance within next year. And then our next slide on performance management relates to the achievement of certain indicators that are included in the MTSF. We've identified three indicators that we wanted to highlight to the committee. In doing this analysis, we understood the five-year target is not yet due if we look at the MTSF. So we have broken it down into the targets over a three-year period. We looked at what has DWS planned for the same period, and then we also included a column relating to the achievement of DWS against its own target. So the number of bulk water supply projects implemented had indicated a target of 53 projects in the MTSF. That would have translated to a target of 32 projects over a three-year period, but we note that the department has set targets that are higher than what is required by the MTSF, but they have only managed to achieve 61% or 42 projects implemented in relation to this particular indicator. If we look at the number of dams rehabilitated projects and new dams constructed, the MTS target requirement over 3 years is 5. DWS set its own target of 9 and have achieved only one project or dam constructed. So in this respect, they are falling significantly short of the MTSF targets. Some of the root causes we've identified relate to the underspending, and the underspending on the RB projects further relates to project management relating to this to the projects that are ongoing. And other root causes included inadequate supervision of contractors and the late identification of poor performance of contractors and protracted supply chain management processes, which we will talk to again a little bit later. We spoke to the number of bucket sanitation systems eradicated. In this slide, we do have some numbers for you to consider. But the expectation over the 3 years was that there should have been implementation of adequate systems across 7,333 systems eradicated in formal areas. And DWS set a target of 23,019. That target was set over a two-year period because there was no indicator essentially for 22-23. And we noted that an achievement of only 1,284 systems eradicated up to the 21-22 financial year. So falling significantly short of the target that has been set. We did note, however, that the department did pick up on this with the 22-23 financial year. There are targets that are included in the annual performance plan. And based on the plan, the department is expecting that they would have completed all of the projects that are implemented to result in, a complete finalization of this particular program. So it's only planned for the next year for completion. Okay, so that essentially relates to our analysis of the performance planning of the department. With the next few slides, we are going to reflect on the work that we've done on critical service delivery matters. I've indicated previously that we had identified the important areas of significance being the management of the infrastructure and the infrastructure projects specifically, the maintenance of infrastructure, water quality, and water losses. So those are our key focus areas. Maybe just for the committee's noting, we've labeled them as Section B in your slides, just so that you are able to follow. But with the first slide, we performed an analysis of the water backlogs. With the SDGs, and if we look at the requirements of the Constitution, it requires that water services are provided to all the citizens of South Africa. With this, we wanted to get an indication of the status as it is currently. When we looked at this analysis, we are using the year 2015 as a base for the comparison. The reason why we do that is because we had performed a performance audit in the 2015 year, so we thought it would be a good base to determine whether there has been any improvement over the 7 years to 2022. In both of these years, we've used information from Stats SA to help us to make this assessment. But essentially, we've identified that there has been very little movement in addressing the backlogs that were identified in 2015. And essentially, this means that all of the delays in the infrastructure projects result in water not being delivered to households and businesses as they need it. In the graph, you will see we've noted that there has only been a marginal decrease in backlogs of 4%. In 2015, we had identified 2.25 million households without having the water services provided to them, and that amount had decreased to 2.215 million households. So the movement of 4% across the 7 years is actually very slow progress in addressing the issues of the backlogs and the provision of water services. If we look at the comparison between among the provinces, we further noticed that in the Eastern Cape and KZN, there have been increases in backlogs. In trying to understand what the actions were necessary to move the provision of water services, we had identified that the National Water and Sanitation Plan had already required that provincial action plans should be developed for all of the provinces, and those action plans would have then assisted to ensure that there's more these improvements in the provision of water services. Through our audit, we identified that these provincial action plans were not developed for all of the provinces. Essentially, then, there has been no coordinated effort to reduce the backlog that were identified in 2015. Another key component of the National Water and Sanitation Plan was the requirement for proper coordination between the different role players, which includes the supporting departments that we spoke to in the earlier slide. So it specifically requires the department to work together with National Treasury, COCTA, Provincial COCTA, SALGA, and municipalities. And through our audit process, we were unable to determine whether that, well, actually, we did identify that that coordination has not been effectively taking place, which has contributed then to the slow progress in the backlogs, the water service backlogs. So our recommendations are essentially around the provincial action plans, which should be developed to address the backlogs. And it is also extremely important for the department to start the process of coordinating efforts amongst the various oversight entities to ensure that on a municipal level that these action plans are appropriately implemented to achieve the desired results. Okay. If we're looking at infrastructure, we then move on to infrastructure essentially. The first thing that we had done as part of our audit process is to look at the various projects that are managed under the RBIC grants specifically. And we noted that for various projects, there were significant delays in these projects that impacted on the equitable and quality access to water services by households and the industry. In the graphs that we presented in this slide, we have indicated on the first slide that says project budget. So we've analyzed the projects that are currently under construction, which we've identified to be 23.2 billion. We've also identified projects that are still in the planning phase of 12.9 billion. So together, the projects that are planned to be managed under the RBIC grant is amounting to 36.2 billion. In terms of the projects that are in the implementation phase, that is the 23.2 billion, we've identified that the projects amounting to 13.4 billion are on track, as is reported by the department, but that there are significant delays in projects, 11 projects specifically, amounting to 9.7 billion that are significantly delayed. Again, just that represents 42% of the budgets of all the projects under construction. So therefore, these are material projects that are significantly delayed. Through our audit process, our discussions with management, we have identified specific root causes relating to that. We've identified inadequate supervision of contractors by municipalities, poor performance of contractors not identified in a timely manner, due diligence not effectively performed, protected supply chain management processes, the lack of an integrated system for effective collation of data from all water service institutions to facilitate effective monitoring of infrastructure projects. In this respect, we looked at the information systems that were available at the department to allow them to effectively monitor the projects. And we noted that there was a significant reliance on manual processes. So this is an area that the department should look at. And again, we noted a lack of coordination among the responsible oversight entities to effectively manage and implement the project, but also to take corrective action when necessary to ensure that these projects remain on track and are completed as quickly as possible within what was actually planned. Essentially we're saying that delays in projects will result in the equitable and quality access to water services by the household. So at the end of the day, when these projects are not completed, the citizen that is intended to receive the service, be it the resident, the industry, or other entities, they're essentially not able to receive this water as is required. With the next few slides, we have provided details of some of the projects that we have identified as being delayed. The intention, if you look at the slide, these are projects that have been started a long time ago. So you would see, for example, with the first one, the Masilonana bulk water supply, the start date of the project was in November 2013. There have been various issues on the projects that have resulted in delays, and the planned date, completion date kept moving. We had the planned completion date at September 2022, and we've noted that the revised completion date is June 2024. Again, 2013 to 2024 is essentially an 11-year period. We have identified also, through discussions with management, through trying to understand where these projects are, the reasons for the delays, and we've documented them in here. Some of it relates to, for the first one, it relates to poor performance of contractors, and then resulting in new contractors being appointed, and then construction being suspended due to non-payment by the municipality. So across all of these projects, you'll see that there are various reasons. We've also tried to include for you the impact on service delivery, and the impact has been determined based on the needs assessment that has been prepared by the department. So with the first one, you'll see that there are 37,586 households that were meant to benefit from this project, and due to the significant delays, as of now, these communities are left with water shortages due to the project delays. I think I won't go through all of them, but I think we're also aware of the Diani Water Services project. Again, this has been going on for a number of years. The reasons for the delays the department is aware of the reasons for the delays. And I think at this point, given the information that we have, what is important from an audit perspective for us is that we get commitments from the department on the action plan that they have in place to get these projects completed. As part of our next audit process, we will also continue to follow up on the commitments that management have made to see, that there is progress in getting through these projects. And I think with the sharing of this information, we're hoping that the committee will also be empowered then to track the completion of these projects so that we can then, just ensure that there is sufficient movement to get these projects completed and to ensure that the end users are eventually receiving the benefits of it. Okay, so there's more projects that we've included in there. Also relating to infrastructure, we did perform reviews of the project life cycle. In this respect, we do get infrastructure specialists to assist us with these reviews because they have the necessary expertise to be able to understand the complexities around these projects and to assist us with identifying weaknesses in the process to allow us to make recommendations to management. What we've indicated in this slide is the various projects that were selected as part of this past audit cycle. We've indicated the project, the budget, and the key findings across these projects. We've noted for the Mvubu project in the Alfred and Zor municipality in the Eastern Cape, for example, that there was no value for money received due to overpayment for goods and services. With that, we've identified an amount of 131 million being identified as fruitless and wasteful expenditure. We did have some limitations in the audit, specifically with the Vau Hamakhara. This one is managed by the Sedibeng Water Board, and for information requested, we were unable to get any information to help us to understand the status of the project. With the Mshloti River Development Project, we've also identified fruitless and wasteful expenditure of 26 million. We've also identified additional project costs resulting from inadequate project management of $103 million. If we look at the phase two of the Mokolo Crocodile River Augmentation Project, we did not identify any findings on that, but also noting that this project is still in the planning phase and it has not yet moved to the implementation phase. So this is something that we will continue to follow through as the project moves into its phases. With the Olifant River Water Resources Development Project, we've identified equipment procured, not utilized for $5.5 million, also indicated as possible fruitless and wasteful expenditure not investigated. We've also identified staff houses not procured at reasonable and competitive rates, again, resulting in possible fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And then with the Vaal River system, including phase two of the Lesotho Highlands Water Project, we were unable to audit this due to our inability to get access to information. With this one, there were challenges in terms of getting information across from another country. So there were certain issues relating to jurisdiction and what we were able to get access to. So that is for the committee to note. Maybe also to note that where we've identified possible fruitless and wasteful expenditure, some of these will continue to be assessed for material irregularities as we move through with the next audit cycle. Usually with fruitless and wasteful expenditure, there is a process that needs to be undertaken to investigate and determine the cause. So these are processes that we've started as part of our material irregularity process, and we'll continue to follow them through with the next audit cycle. In terms of the root causes, so at Sedibeng Water, we've identified leadership instabilities and inadequate internal control environment that contributed to us not getting information to be able to audit these two projects. We've identified a lack of adequate oversight and project management at both WTE and TCTA for the fruitless and wasteful expenditure that has been incurred. And in certain instances, we've noted that the market has not been adequately tested to ensure that the prices that were contracted for were appropriate. Okay. Essentially, in terms of this whole review, we have been performing project life cycle reviews over a number of years that we've been also reporting to the committee. We noted that there has been slow progress to address the root causes of poor project management in terms of that we've identified in prior years. We then move on to the maintenance of infrastructure. Again, a significant sector focus area for us. We've essentially identified through our audit work that the department has not allocated sufficient financial resources to ensure that the maintenance of infrastructure. And this has contributed to the dilapidated infrastructure and is a cause for concern. In terms of the graphs that have been presented, the first one relates to the maintenance budget versus the backlogs in maintenance. So in terms of that budget, you'll see that in terms of the graph, you will see that we have indicated what is the budget that has been required, as has been determined by the department. So there are processes in place at the department to determine what their maintenance requirements are. And in terms of the budget that is required, we have identified what that is for the period from 2013-14. And if you look at the blue line on the graph, it would essentially set out what the budget requirements are. Unfortunately, the department was unable to obtain adequate financial resources to be able to maintain the assets at the required level. So with the green line on the graph, we've indicated what has been approved across these particular years. And you'll notice that from 2014-15, that green line has consistently been under the budget that is required. And then the red line that is included in the graph shows the backlog in maintenance as a result of constantly not achieving the required budget. So that would be an indication of the cumulative maintenance budget backlog, noting at the end of 21-22 that an amount of 5.3 billion is potentially needed in addition to, in terms of the maintenance requirements. With the second graph, we have looked at the planned at the annual performance plan. We have determined what was actually planned to be achieved by the department across the period from 2014-15 to 21-22. And we've noted that consistently across this period, the actual achievement of the department in terms of maintenance has been lower than the planned targets. And in addition, the planned target has been consistently reducing from the 19-20 financial year. So underachievement on what was actually planned also contributes further to backlogs in the maintenance of infrastructure. We've also identified that the asset management plan has not been updated since 2018. This is a requirement of GIAMA. GIAMA is the Government's Infrastructure and Asset Management Act, but that plan was last updated in 2018. Financial constraints have been indicated as a reason for not maintaining infrastructure optimally. And we further noted a lack of a proper system for effective management of infrastructure maintenance, again, given the amount of the value of the assets that is managed by the department. It is important that they have an appropriate information system to allow them to manage their maintenance projects. So essentially, we're saying that if the department is not adequately maintaining through the water trading entity its current infrastructure, it will contribute to avoidable water losses being incurred, and it will affect the reliable delivery of water services. Inadequate maintenance will result in a shorter lifespan of assets and will also result in increased costs in replacing assets sooner rather than later if it was adequately maintained. And poor maintenance will result in dilapidated infrastructure that may not be able to meet the needs of the to meet the demands of the community. So, in terms of our recommendation, it is recommended that the department relooks at the asset management plan to ensure that it is appropriately updated, and then financial resourcing of that plan needs to also be indicated and factored in. We'll then move on to our focus area on water losses. With the water losses, again, the department is monitoring water the water losses across water service authorities. So that is commendable from the department that they are keeping track of the amount of water that is lost through the system. What we show in our graph are the avoidable water losses that have been identified. With this, we are comparing a five-year period. So we looked at the report that was prepared in 2017 to identify the amount of water that has been lost, and it's measured in million cubic meters of water. And we compare that to 2022. What we've identified is that overall, for all of the provinces that we've looked at, there has been a substantial increase in the amount of water that has been lost through the system. In 2017, there was 1.1 billion cubic meters, and in 2022, it had risen to 1.3 million cubic meters. The red line that you see there essentially is a comparison or an indication of improvement or regression for the provinces. So if we look at the numbers, we noted that in the Western Cape and the Eastern Cape, there has been some reduction in the amount of losses over the five-year period. However, if we look at the right-hand side of the graph for Northern Cape and Gauteng, there has been a substantial increase in water losses since 2017, noting amounts of 41.4% increase in losses in Northern Cape and 42.4% increase in Gauteng. With the second graph, we try to quantify the amount of the losses. So with the red bar, we refer to the sunk costs, or essentially the cost of the water that has been lost. That has been estimated to be 16.6 billion rands. And the opportunity cost is the amount of revenue that would have been lost through the loss of this avoidable water, and that is estimated to be 26.2 million. So essentially the numbers are quite significant. We've noted very little improvement since 2017. We've noted that there is a significant loss in revenue to these water service authorities, and it is therefore quite an essential area that the department needs to look at to try to improve on or rather reduce the water losses that are currently being incurred. Through our audit process, we identified that while the monitoring processes are being undertaken, there is a responsibility that is being placed on the municipalities or the water service authorities to develop action plans to deal with this. However, it hasn't been effective, as is demonstrated by the numbers. But we noticed that there is not a national action plan that has been developed on a national level by the department to address the root causes the transversal root causes that have been identified. So that is something that the department needs to look at. The root causes have been identified through this process, but there isn't a national action plan to deal with that. We further noted that that there are significant losses due to leaks due to the aging infrastructure that has not been adequately repaired and or maintained. And through our audit process, we have also followed up on the program, the War on Leaks program, that was intended to assist the country to reduce the water losses. But during the audit, the department was unable to demonstrate that, you know, that particular program had any impact on curbing the water losses, despite the significant investment in the training. So our recommendation around water losses is that the department should develop a national action plan that would address specifically the root causes that have been identified for the water that has been lost through the system. Then we move on to the area of water quality. This is the last area that we have on our sector focus areas. Essentially, with this focus area, we looked at the Blue and Green Drop reports. The members will be aware that these reports were published by the department in March of 2022. In terms of the reports themselves, we've demonstrated on or depicted in the graphs that you see. For the Blue Drop report, it has been the Blue Drop report essentially relates to drinking water quality, and understanding that the report had covered various aspects, not just quality of water, but it did indicate a risk rating profile for the municipalities that they had looked at. It is concerning in terms of the results, where the department has identified 23% of the municipalities that have been reviewed to be in a critical state, indicating that there is significantly high risk that the water quality will not be of the right standard. 11% of the these municipalities were in the high-risk category, so and 18% in the medium-risk category, with only 48% in the low-risk category. When we looked at the Green Drop report, essentially would have looked at the various wastewater treatment plants across the country and would have provided a risk rating in terms of the water quality. We've the department has identified 39% of these wastewater treatment works as being in a critical condition and 25% in a poor condition. The report has also identified root causes relating to the poor outcomes, and some of the root causes relate to insufficient resources at the Water Service Authority, including insufficient chemical supplies, spares, and vehicles to ensure optimal operations of the schemes, lack of adequate design capacity, lack of daily flow meter readings, lack of calibrated flow meters, insufficient budgets to appoint suitably qualified staff, as being some of the reasons for the poor outcomes. We've noted that in terms of the report, the department has requested that the various water service authorities submit an action plan 60 days after publishing the report. Through the audit process, we've also identified that the response to that request has been quite poor. So there has not been a lot of plans that were submitted at the date that we concluded the audit. So the response by the Water Service Authorities has been lacking. Potentially, one of the reasons for that could be the lack of adequate skills and capacity to be able to complete those plans. That is something that the department needs to also look at. We've identified lack of adequate capacity at DWS to review and monitor the action plans of the Water Service Authorities, and a lack of coordination amongst the responsible entities again, where the COCTA would be responsible for the performance of the municipalities. However, there wasn't any coordination between the department and COCTA to develop an appropriate plan to ensure that the water service authorities are effectively responding to the root causes. Overall, we've identified that there has not been a national action plan to address the specific root causes for these two reports. And that's where our recommendation essentially lies. Okay, maybe just to give the committee just very brief feedback on our findings on the KZN flood relief. As you're aware, there was a special report that was published by the Auditor General relating to flood relief as a whole in KZN and Eastern Cape. With respect to the water sector, with the KZN relief efforts, this was essentially coordinated or led by the Itikwini Metro. I think the findings that you see here relate to the overall findings that we had on the services, or the water services that were provided in Itikwini. We had identified that there were water tankers that were used to provide water to the effective communities. And as part of that process, the department itself was responsible for procuring a portion of the water tankers. So that was the extent of their responsibility, whereas Itikrini was responsible then for effectively utilizing the tankers that were acquired and for ensuring that water services or that the tankers had reached the community and that water was provided effectively. Essentially, we, through the audit, we've identified that the process that was undertaken was not adequate and that several residents had gone without water for a number of days. In certain instances, residents had to resort to using unsafe water, as is also reflected in the picture. If I had to just maybe specifically point out a few matters, if we look at this process as a whole, essentially the main test in terms of this process that was undertaken was the ability of the sector to be able to respond to a disaster situation. And so understanding that this was a disaster situation, some of the findings we've identified included the poor coordination and integration between or among the three spheres, which is Itikrini Metro, KZN COCTA, and DWS, to ensure that resources were effectively utilized. We noted that information flow for decision-making was not always effective and resulted in poor coordination. With the department specifically, we identified that the procurement was done on an emergency basis. However, when going through that process, the supplier had quoted significantly higher prices than that which they had quoted to Itikrini Metro and some of the other entities that were involved in the process. So that was brought to the attention of management through the audit process. And maybe also noting that the leadership at DWS were quick to react to the audit finding. Management did get involved with this particular process. They had flagged the problem with the supplier, and they were able to renegotiate contract terms with the supplier to ensure that they were able to reduce the prices. In renegotiating the contract, they had essentially extended the term of the contract so that they can get more value out of the amount that has been contracted for. So that essentially was the main finding around the KZN flood relief project. And then we move on to material irregularities. The committee may be familiar with our process around this. We have been reporting this for a few years in the portfolio. For this year, the material irregularity process was only implemented at three entities, DWS, Water Trading Entity, and TCTA. So it was not implemented at WRC, which from on our side is classified as a small audit. A material irregularity essentially means any non-compliance with or contravention of legislation, fraud, theft, or a breach of a fiduciary duty identified during an audit that resulted in or is likely to result in a material financial loss, the misuse or loss of a material public resource, or substantial harm to a public sector institution or the general public. So that essentially is the definition that we've applied to our audit process. Understanding that there are various processes that we go through, there is also the possibility as an office that we could refer any material irregularities that have been identified to relevant public bodies. We may recommend actions to resolve material irregularities or take binding remedial action. And as a last resort, it is possible for the Auditor General to issue a certificate of debt for failure to implement any remedial action. Fortunately, with the material irregularities we've identified, we are not at that phase as yet, as appropriate actions are in the process of being undertaken. We also just highlight for you the three matters that we've identified for the portfolio. The first one is at the Department of Water and Sanitation. We've been reporting for a few years the actual financial loss relating to a payment made to a consulting firm without evidence of work performed. The amount is 17.9 million. It was identified as a loss. The department has started a disciplinary process for the one individual that remained within the government sector, and that disciplinary hearing is ongoing. A criminal case has been opened in 2018, and according to our follow-ups, it is still a matter that is in progress, and the accounting officer did file a combined summons with the High Court on 22 November 2018 to try to recover this loss from the supplier, and the court case was still in progress at the date of the report. So that was the one matter at the department. For water trading entity, there were two matters that were identified. The first relates to payments not made within 30 days, resulting in additional interest. The amount identified was 2.2 million. And with this matter as well, an investigation was conducted that identified that three former officials were responsible for the loss. And a legal opinion was obtained stating that the letters be written to the former officials concerned to make payment within 30 days. That is a matter that is ongoing. And an opportunity was provided to these officials to provide representation. However, none was received. And on 4th of July, 2022, the entity instructed the state attorneys to issue summons for the recovery of the loss from the former officials. So there is a process that is ongoing to recover that amount. And then the third matter identified is a loss of 39 million that relates to amounts paid to a contractor for site re-establishment costs and standing time. And with this as well, an investigation was finalized in July. And the investigation identified three individuals representing the entity that were responsible for the weaknesses. And the investigation recommended disciplinary process to be followed, and the accounting officer is committed to conduct those disciplinary processes. So overall, I think we had identified that there are processes in place. The accounting officer has started process for consequence management. Where there is financial losses, there has been attempts to recover the amount, the money that has been lost. And we've also noted that with the DWS specifically, that there has been internal controls that have been implemented to prevent such losses in future. I think with WTE, we note that there has been a slow response in implementing the recommendations of the investigation. There have been steps that have been taken by the accounting officer. It's just that there is a slow response in implementing some of the disciplinary actions. Okay, so those are the matters relating to material irregularities. We'll then move on to some of the financial management and compliance issues, more related again to our audit report. This slide refers to quality of financial reporting. As was previously indicated, we identified material errors in the financial statements of DWS, WTE, and TCTA. This was mainly as a result of poor internal control in certain instances that had resulted in these errors. For the three entities, they were able to correct those errors, and therefore they had received unqualified audits. And if those corrections were not allowed as part of the audit process, the three entities would have been qualified. Okay. Also, moving on to financial health, Overall, if we look at the entities in the portfolio, we did not identify any audit teams that have that had a significant concern around its ability to continue as a going concern. Maybe just the key matters that we wanted to flag is the long debt collection periods at WTE and TCTA. We've noted average debt collection periods of 283 days at WTE and 328 days for TCTA. In terms of creditor payments, the average creditor payment days were 42 days at DWS, 89 days for WTE, and 193 days for TCTA. The slow payments of creditors essentially impacts on the ability of the suppliers to be able to run their business. And where we deal with the smaller entities, it could have a significant impact on the sustainability of their businesses. So we do flag this as a concern where creditor payment periods are greater than 30 days. So those are just the key matters around financial health. If we move to compliance with legislation, except for WRC, the other three entities did have material non-compliance findings as shown on the screen. These related to procurement and contract management at WTE, which we'll talk to with the next slide. But all of these three entities had findings on the quality of financial statements, prevention of irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and consequence management, which we'll also talk to a bit later. If we look at procurement and payments, there were two matters that were included in the audit report of WTE. Those relate to uncompetitive and unfair procurement processes and local content and production requirements not adhered to in terms of the regulations. So we do note across all of the entities that goods and services were delivered. However, some of the five pillars of procurement were compromised, that being transparency and competitiveness. So those are key findings on procurement and payments. We then move on to irregular expenditure. What you see on the screen essentially relates to irregular expenditure that has been identified in a particular year. So it's for the year. You would see that there has been quite a significant decrease since the 2018-19 year to 21-22 to an amount of 506 million for the portfolio. Still quite a significant amount at 506 million, but also noting that the WTE, DWS and TC2A are quite expenditure intensive as they are responsible for managing projects. So the expenditure there relates to high value projects that, this is something that the department needs to look at in terms of its internal control processes to ensure that the internal controls are able to detect any issues relating to non-compliance with regulations and legislation, and that they are able to prevent irregular expenditure. So this is something that the portfolio needs to look at to strengthen their internal controls. We then move on to consequence management, which has been reported across DWS, WTE, and TCTA. When we look at consequence management, the Act essentially requires that whenever an instance of irregular expenditure is incurred, that the accounting officer will investigate the reason that the irregular expenditure was incurred and will then, through the investigation process, determine what the appropriate course of action will be to address irregular expenditure, which might be an improvement in the internal controls and could also possibly be a recovery of the irregular expenditure from the responsible person. And in the investigation, we'll make recommendations, and the accounting officer must address or deal with those recommendations appropriately in order to effectively implement consequence management. So that is essentially the process. What we've identified and what you see on the first graph on your screen is that the balance on irregular expenditure for the portfolio has been increasing quite considerably since the 2018-19 financial year. There has been a slight reduction in 21-22, as is also indicated in the screen, to indicate, you know, that there has been some movement in attempting to condone some of the irregular expenditure that has been identified. However, through this process, if we compare the 21-22 amount of 18.6 billion versus 21-22 amount of 17.9 billion, we have identified that there is essentially an amount of 17.4 billion of that closing balance that has not been dealt with. When we say not being dealt with, we're saying that there has not been finalization on an investigation process. There has not been recommendations that has been made relating to that. And therefore, there has been no actions that have been taken to condone the irregular expenditure that has been incurred. The reason provided by management for the delays in effectively dealing with the irregular expenditure is due to delays in the investigation process. So we are aware that the department and the entities are, you know, in the process of trying to address this. However, the progress in those investigations has been slow, and it's something that I think the portfolio needs to look at to ensure that they can speedily resolve those or complete those investigations and then implement the recommendations, eventually leading to the condonation of the irregular expenditure balances that sit at the that sits now on the financial statements. So that is consequence management. Okay. This is just a summary of what we have identified. And maybe just moving on to the tail end of the presentation. So through our processes, we have met with management, we've met with the leadership, as well as the accounting officer and the minister. We have discussed our audit findings, and we got feedback from them, and we did make recommendations with a view to get commitments. What is important, I think, to note at this stage is that we are quite pleased with the fact that the minister has successfully appointed a permanent DG and CFO. The department has had acting positions at the DG level for maybe 8 to 10 years, so quite a substantial time, and a CFO the CFO position has also been vacant for a number of years. So the DG has now been appointed as of the beginning of this year. It has effectively been 3 months, I think, into the financial year that we're looking at, and the CFO was appointed thereafter. So definitely some positive steps that is being taken. We also are confident that with the stability in leadership, that the recommendations that we've made and the actions that will be taken going forward, you know, will materialize, and that there will be some improvements in the process. The recommendations that we've made essentially relate to detailed action plans to address the challenges that we've identified relating to the implementation of key projects, the maintenance of infrastructure, the management of water quality risks at water service authorities, and water losses at water service authorities. So we will continue to then review these action plans and consider the impact over the next year. We're also recommending timeous monitoring and oversight over the action plans to address both internal and external audit findings that have been identified to prevent any regression in the audit outcomes, and this will include the continuous monitoring of compliance with laws and regulations. And we also recommending continuous monitoring of compliance with or review of financial statements to ensure that financial statements that are submitted do not have material errors included in there, therein. We have also discussed with the accounting officer and the executive authority on the issues that we've identified with respect to the Lesotho Highlands Water Project royalties, and we have recommended that negotiations with the government of Lesotho must be expedited so that we can receive information sooner to enable us to complete our processes, but also that there's a negotiation around the overpayments or the possible overpayments that have been made that must still be recovered from the government of Lesotho. Okay. And then on our last slide it relates to our portfolio committee message. We firstly, on the left-hand side of your slide, will reflect on the 2021 year. We had recommended for the previous year that there should be proper reconciliation of payments made for training costs under the War on Leaks project to supporting evidence to ensure that payments are only made for actual training costs incurred. We are happy to report back that those reconciliations have been done and that this has resulted in the improved audit outcome for the department. We had also requested the executive authority and the accounting officer to take effective steps to finalize the recalculation of the net benefit rate relating to royalty payments made to the government of Lesotho. But with this, we have identified that the progress has been slow in finalizing the discussions, and this is a matter that will needs to be looked at over the next year as well. And in our conclusion, we include our key messages to the committee members to assist with the monitoring of the outcomes, the audit outcomes for the water portfolio. And in that respect, we are recommending that there should be engagement with the accounting officer and the executive authority at least on a quarterly basis to understand the steps that were taken or implemented to address material irregularities that were identified. This essentially relates to the consequence management processes to reduce the irregular expenditure balances. We recommend that you continue to rigorously follow up on the department's implementation of consequence management. We also recommend that the committee engages with the accounting officer and the executive authority on how the portfolio plans to manage the challenges experienced with the implementation of infrastructure projects. I think the examples have been provided. Also that you monitor progress on the implementation of these initiatives on a regular basis. We're also recommending that progress reports must be provided by the executive and accounting officer on the implementation of action plans developed to address the root causes of water losses and water quality risks. And we're also requesting the executive authority, supported by the accounting officer, to provide feedback on the effectiveness of the steps being taken to finalize the recalculation of the net benefit rate relating to royalty overpayments made to the government of the city. Friends, I'll come home tonight. Thank you very much for the opportunity. I will hand over back to you then. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks a lot. Thanks very much. And I'm sure we have agreed earlier on that we are going to immediately jump into the second presentation. I want us to do that. We are not doing bad in time, and I think let us do the same on the second one. Item 5.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable members, and colleagues, fellow colleagues. My name is Mpho Banda. I'm from the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation. With me, I've got our DDG, Memakomo, touching them. And I have also our head of the unit, Gifiwe Sithwaban. Let me just... I'm trying to share my screen. I'll hand over to the DDG to just introduce.
Thank you very much, Mpho. Mpho is very keen on presenting, and I love that, the energy from the youth. Thank you very much. Let me greet the Honorable Chair and the Honorable Members of Committee. As Mpho has already introduced me, my name is Makomu Chatsinda. I'm the DDG, responsible for sector monitoring branch in the DPME. So that branch is responsible for monitoring of the MTSF. And this water and sanitation is part of priority 5. We are here in order to support the portfolio committee in terms of you know, how we view the sector from the MTSF and assessments which we do. So our focus on of our report will be mainly, you know, on the MTSF. What is of importance is that we've already for the financial year that we are assessing now with the annual report, we've already submitted our report and approved. It was approved by Cabinet in June during the Cabinet. We've got a Cabinet week, POA Cabinet week of the 28th and 29th. Of June. So then what you are receiving basically is what was discussed, and also the recommendations and actions, as well as the decisions which were made by the Cabinet, which comes to you, which is a very much you know, a more privileged manner to find out what the other portfolios are also looking at. So what is our approach? As you have known, as a government, we do the result-based approach. So meaning that from at the MTSF level, since the MTSF is a medium-term strategic framework and it is a five-year chunk of the NDP, we're actually, you know, trying to find our way towards the measuring the NDP. How far are we with the NDP? You know, meaning that within that 5 year, I heard the AG was referring to, you know, the MTSF, the medium term. Where is our APP now fitting within this year, current year, which passed within that 5 years frame? For us now, it is quite an exciting time that we're in the midterm of the sixth administration. So this means that within a short period of time, we will be providing with a midterm report, which actually gives us the trends and what has been happening throughout from 2019 when we adopted this MTSF to date. That report will be coming. We are finalizing that. And, you know, in the next cycle, we are now in the cycle of reporting for the 6 months of this year, which we present to Cabinet in the beginning of November. So this is a very critical time, and your inputs into the process are very, very, very critical, you know, that we address the issues which AG has come up with, the issues which you are coming with, you know, coming from the department. So in which this way, we have got the multiple lenses of monitoring and oversight, which is the Parliament, you know, is coming up with. So with this few words, I would like to give Mpho, Ms. Banda, the opportunity. She's the expert in the area. Thank you, Mpho. Take over. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Didi. Thank you, DDG. I'm going to try and share my screen. Please just give me a moment. Are you able to see the presentation? Can you just confirm for me?
Yes, we do.
Okay, thank you. So, as the DDG has given us an introduction, the purpose of the presentation is basically to appraise the Department of Water and Sanitation on the performance of the year ending 31 March 2022, to also just outline the performance of the department in line with the monitoring work that we have done through Priority 5 of the MTSF, and just to give annual performance for the year relating to 1 April 2021 to 31 March 2022. We will also just zoom into the key achievements, the persistent challenges and binding constraints that relate to the sector, to the water sector, and then put forward our recommendations. As our DDG has given an approach, an introduction on the methodology and an approach that we use as a department, we have adopted a results-based monitoring approach, which also takes us forward to using evidence as a basis for decision-making. And part of the data sources that we use in forming our performance monitoring is that we collect data through our government systems. We also engage research institutions and universities on the work that they do and the multilateral organizations just to give an overview, a proper comprehensive view of the progress within the sector. We also use evaluations where possible and where they have been undertaken. We use access policy briefs, research reports, and case studies. But moreover, in some cases, we also do verification through site visits. So we go on the ground, engage the departments, plan with the departments on meeting within the specific sector to basically verify whether the information that we receive through our report is indeed valid and accurate. And we track progress through our various ways. We also, as the DDG has alluded, we compile biannual reports that give an overview of the various sectors within government. And as we have indicated, that we use an evidence-based system, so our recommendations will obviously cascade from the work that we have analyzed, the performance that we have analyzed, to then put forward our recommendations and remedial actions that are necessary. But we also do have performance dialogues with departments from time to time to engage on interventions that are progressing and interventions that still need attention that are lagging. So this a diagram in front of us is just to basically now put, all that I've said earlier into a diagrammatical framework to show that we track progress through the implementation of the programs, of the projects, the interventions, and ultimately we are interested in looking into the outcomes and whether indeed we are achieving the impact and the goals that we want to see as a country. We have a theory of change that basically sets a pathway for us on how we intend to guide and direct the government as a whole in getting to the impact in line with our MTSF and the NDP, as shown in the earlier diagram, that obviously our projects which start from your input activities and outputs should ultimately take us to the outcomes and impact where in the end we want to see improved access to basic services and improved quality for all South Africans. Now, from here onwards, I'll be looking at the performance of the department against the sector. Now, the strategic intent that leads the sector into where we are and why we are monitoring the performance It's because through the NDP, we envisage a South Africa that recognizes that the importance of secure and equitable access to water is important as a catalyst for socioeconomic development. Again, the prioritization of basic services infrastructure to ensure the provision of water and sanitation is very necessary to enable economic growth and social development goals. And we want to also see all citizens having access to affordable and reliable water and improved hygienic sanitation by 2030. The problem that we wish to put to the portfolio committee is that over the years, we have seen progress. South Africa has demonstrated progressive growth in the delivery of basic services. So that across the various basic services, and as much as we have been able to achieve, you know, access of the services, however, we have noted over the years that water service authorities are now struggling to operate, and quite important to maintain the water and sanitation infrastructure. We have seen that the failure to deliver basic services also has created immense hardships for the residents, and the fact that residents cannot rely on the services that are provided by water service authorities is quite concerning for social and economic development. Now, through this, the NDP wants to also secure water scarcity to address issues of water scarcity as a binding constraint to the development of the country. An analysis of the departmental annual performance in relation to the annual report they have tabled for the 2021-2022 financial year, we recognize that the department has three programs. The first program is relates to administration, the second one, water planning and information management, the third one is on water infrastructure. The table on the right is basically to give guidance on how we assess the performance of the department versus the interventions versus the performance plan that they have for the year, and again the MTSS interventions. So where we say, when you see a green color, it's basically to say that 100% of the targets have been achieved. At orange, we are looking at partial achievement. So there's been progress, however, there's delays or they are not yet at where they're supposed to be. And on the red block, it's just to say that we are not seeing much progress. Financial performance, I will not really dwell on it. As the Auditor General gave a very elaborate presentation on how they have performed financially. So this is just a reflection of the annual report financial performance. Now, in here again, coming from the annual performance, the department focuses on six outcomes. Now, we had analyzed those six outcomes based on the targets that they have set for themselves and how far they went in implementing them during the 2021-22 financial year. So this is just a summarized demonstration in a graph. That showed us how far the department had. So overall, in relation to those outcome indicators, we see that 62% of the outcome indicators were achieved by the department. Now, based on the performance of the six outcome indicators, we have seen an analysis has shown us that significant strides in the fulfillment of the project have been made in outcome one that relates to the protection and restoration of ecological infrastructure. So those are interventions that focus on the protection of water resources and ensuring pollution control and rehabilitation. On the other outcome indicator where we have seen good progress is on water and sanitation services that are managed effectively. In the investment of infrastructure, particularly new infrastructure, the department has shown some sort of progress in relation to that, and hence they have done well there. And again, relating to outcome five, which now focuses on the regulatory environment, significant strides have also been made in that respect. The following interventions showed that they still require attention over the next years. It's the water redistribution for transformation. So that looks at your regional water utilities and your water user associations. Now, taking this to the MPSS, again, looking at the performance of the department against the MPSS. So we, on the first column on the left, we look at the 2019 to 2024 MPSS target and how they have then broken it down for themselves into an annual target and the performance in relation to that. Now, looking at the assessment of the water service authorities to ensure the functionality, we see that the annual target was that 100% of the water service authorities needed to be assessed. However, only 76%, which is 109 of the 144, had completed their functional assessment. Now, after these assessments have been conducted, it's important that those that have been red flagged, they need to now draft a 5-year municipal priority action plan that will basically now address those issues that came from that assessment. From that, 98 were required to develop the plans, but only 18% of those water service authorities developed the priority action plan. So there's still quite a substantial number of these WSAs that have not put together a plan on how they're going to address the challenges. And in relation to the provision of adequate sanitation and hygiene, the department is expected to put together a national sanitation integrated plan. But moreover, they are then required to now start submitting implementation reports twice a year on the progress of that the implementation of that plan. And to this date, that has not been done, although we have seen that a draft National Sanitation Integrated Plan has been developed. It still needs to be approved. And then I believe thereafter, we can only start seeing the implementation reports. On the target that relates to the provision of, the reliability of water services, we look at the target that relates to bucket sanitation systems, as the Auditor General also indicated that in their assessment, in their audit, they have seen that the department had not included the bucket sanitation systems in the APP. Indeed, that is the case. There was no provision for it. In fact, this indicator since 2019 has been moving quite slowly. And however, but in the last performance dialogue that we had with the department, they had indicated that there is construction of the bus infrastructure that will basically be able to connect the waterborne sanitation that is in progress. So that plan is there, and they're looking in the next 2 years that indeed they will now start putting in together the top structures so that they can eradicate these buckets. Then the department is also expected to now identify 9 refurbishment projects and implement them over the MTSF period. And if to this date, none of these refurbishment projects have been identified. And in our engagements with them, it resulted from the issue that there's no 5-year reliability implementation plan, as you see at the bottom line there, that there's no reliability implementation plans. Once these are completed, then they will inform the identification of the refurbishment project. In relation to the Blue Drop program, the Blue Drop program has kicked off. The department has completed 1,186 water treatment works assessments. However, this is just for the Blue Drop risk rating. So the full assessment that is done is, you know, in comparison to the Green Drop program, is expected to be carried out in the 22-23 financial year. But the fact that already the department has started making preparations, moving into the new financial year, it's showing good progress, and hence they are partially achieved. So on the monitoring of non-compliant water supply systems against the regulatory systems, the department has exceeded the target in that and has monitored 121% of those water supply systems. In relation to the bulk water supply and sanitation projects that needed to be completed, I just want to say that this target here, the performance here, was just analyzed in terms of the 2020-21 financial year. As much as there might have been challenges in achieving the target during the 2020-21 financial year, but in relation to the MTSF period, the department has really shown good progress. It was the challenging aspect or performance in relation to this target has been in the 2020-21 financial year. But over the midterm, we have seen good progress, where 42 actually of those bulk water supply projects have been completed. So we are not, from an MTS perspective, it is, we are not really worried about this indicator. Now, on the green drop regulator requirements, the program was launched in the 2020-21 financial year. After 10 years of, you know, of stagnation, it has not been done in a very long time. So in the opening of this program in the 2020-21 financial year, 995 wastewater treatment works were assessed, which is 103%. Now, of that, as much as, you know, the water treatment works have been assessed, only 23 have been green drop certified. So that's just an indicator that against the standards that the plants were assessed by, many of them are really not meeting the standards and have failed that assessment test, if we have to put it in that way. So it's concerning. We might say it's green in terms of the intervention, the target itself being achieved, but in terms of the quality of what we're getting out of that intervention, it's quite worrying. On the monitoring of wastewater systems, again, this one, the department has done well with 177% of those wastewater systems monitored. Looking at the regulatory framework, which has been planned over the MTSF, the department has a draft National Water Amendment Bill, and again, the Draft Water Services Amendment Bill. These have been submitted to the Office of the State Law Advisor to just get a legal opinion on the adequacy of those bills. So now to now delve deeper into our MTSF targets, interventions, and what they translate into on the ground into the communities, we now bring a perspective of that into this presentation to show how these interventions, how these translate into the community and the recipients of those projects. Looking at access to water services, we have seen growth in the provision of water services from 2002 to 2020, where the growth has increased from 84.4% to 89.1%. Although if you look at the graph, you will realize that from 2014, this figure has slowly been stagnating, and that's basically the household formation has been outgrowing the demand and the ability, the capacity of the department to be able to provide for services. We've indicated that as much as we've seen notable improvement, there's been the largest decline in water services in Free State, Limpopo, and Mpumalanga. Although we can commend ourselves for access to services, water services over the years. However, now South Africa is faced with the challenge of dysfunctional water supply, where households experience from time to time water interruptions. So that can last from between 2 days to close to 15 days. In the previous financial period, this figure was sitting at a quarter, close to 25% of South Africans that have reported dysfunctionality, and this has now increased in the 2021 financial period to a third, that is 30.8%. So that is a red flag and something to look out for. Water reliability and safety is also regressing as a growing concern in the sector, where we have seen residents also complaining. Perceptions about the water quality have also declined from 7.7% to 6.9%. And most of these problems around the water quality are attributed to the poor maintenance of the infrastructure of water and wastewater plants. In relation to access to improved sanitation, similarly to water services, we have seen growth over the years, but in the later years, this has stagnated again, where we sit with 83.2% of households that have access to improved or functioning sanitation facilities. Now, just to take us back to the bucket eradication system, as I have earlier indicated that this program has shown it has been lagging since the implementation of the MTSS. To date, we have only been able to eradicate 11.6% of the bucket sanitation systems. However, the department has shown that they have a bucket eradication plan, which will focus on Free State households in Free State and the Northern Cape to basically address this issue of the bucket sanitation systems. Again, South Africa is faced with an issue of rapid rural-urban migration, where a lot of people are moving from your rural areas, moving into your urban areas. This is also creating, a huge demand and strain on the municipalities in the provision of water and sanitation infrastructure to address this. Municipalities have indicated that obviously as a form of relief to these informal settlements or that are popping up, they are providing bucket sanitation systems, and the pressure keeps on going high simply because of this urbanization challenge. As I have indicated, bucket eradication program is the one challenge that we are sitting with. However, the department has also put together a draft national sanitation integrated plan to address this. They've also drafted provincial action plans for all provinces to address arising issues on sanitation failures. The interventions that are of worry for the MTSF period is the reliability implementation plans that need to be developed for the priority districts together with the refurbishment projects that will be identified thereafter. Now, these are some of the key achievements that we have seen from the sector. Through the infrastructure fund, work has begun, and a total of 78 million has been allocated for project preparation. A project management office has been set up to support municipalities and capacitate them in developing the blended finance water projects. We also seen that there's ongoing support by the department to ensure the right mix of the financing resources, and projects are currently at various planning phases. I've spoken that the Green Drop program has been relaunched after 10 years of not being of water wastewater treatment works not being assessed. So that is quite a key thing to see that the program indeed has taken off. What we now need to start focusing on is the results that are coming out of there and the plans that are necessary to address those challenges. Again, with the Blue Drop, we can see preparation by the department by conducting the Blue Drop risk ratings. So the full assessment that is conducted in the 2022-23 financial year would also give us a perspective on what's happening in the space. The water and wastewater systems, the department has been monitoring them since, the beginning of the MTSF period, and they've actually exceeded the performance targets from year to year. The persistent challenges that we continue to see in the sector is the threat of a water crisis as a result of insufficient investment in water infrastructure, particularly on the maintenance and refurbishment of existing infrastructure. Again, case of climatic variations that we are now seeing that are challenging the country has also posed a threat. We've seen drought in various parts of the country, in Western Cape, where those areas are experiencing water supply challenges, in the, again, the capacity of water engineers. This is a problem across various municipalities, the ability and the capacity of them to be able to take on water projects, water sector projects is a bit of a problem. When we look at the spending on the municipal infrastructure grant, we've seen that 11.8 billion has been allocated to municipalities during the 21-22 financial year. However, only 75% of this budget has been spent. These under expenditure trends have also contributed to the huge backlogs that we see in the rehabilitation of the aging infrastructure. And again, the underinvestment of the repairs and maintenance by the water service authorities has led to high water losses. You know, taken from the earlier presentation, indeed, there is a problem of technical and non-technical losses. The norm in relation to the National Treasury financial norms is that 30% of the water, you know, of the water losses is expected. Not that it's approved, but however, there is that provision. Today, we sit with 50% of water losses through the various water systems. So that is a threat to water security. And 84% of these municipalities have incurred water distribution losses. So indeed, the issue of infrastructure is really it's an increasing problem. We indicate what these effects, what these challenges mean on the citizenry and the residents of this country. Poor service delivery is very evident. Municipalities, we've seen dysfunctionality and water interruptions that have been reported from time to time. But we are also concerned about the businesses that are threatening to close down due to longstanding problems by municipalities on the provision of water. We have seen in the Northwest where the Clover factory has closed down at the Zobotleng municipality simply because of the lack of providing reliable water services. We have also seen resident associations taking municipalities to court to attempt to take over the water services function from the municipality because the municipality is not able to provide the services effectively. So this is really going to be a growing trend if it is not addressed, it's not looked into and addressed speedily. We've also seen a very a parallel relationship between poor debt management by municipalities and the provision of service delivery. So municipalities that are not collecting debt from households, particularly on the services that they have provided, obviously that will translate into poor service delivery and it affects the residents that are already paying. So it can also translate later into a poor payment culture, especially with those that are paying, that seeing that they are not really receiving the services that they are paying for. The consumer debt keeps on increasing from year to year. At the end of 31 March 22, we are sitting at 255 billion, of which 68% of this component belongs to households. This has really grown from 230 billion as at March 2021. Now, just to give also a perspective of what we mean by, you know, infrastructure dilapidation and how it affects the communities on the ground. As the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation, we did site visits after the April floods. In KZN, we visited Etegwini Municipality and Inlembe Municipality just to see the damages, to review the impact of the water services infrastructure and the damages and basically the impact that it has had on the residents that are not able to receive water because of the flood damages. When we went with the MISA engineers on the ground, we found that, in fact, some of these problems, you know, that resulted during the flood time. Yes, the flood was a natural disaster that couldn't have been avoided, but we have realized that even some of the cases that we've seen on the ground could have been avoided. The plant, when we visited the water treatment plant in Tonga, we saw that the plant had already existing problems even prior to the flood. The sluice gates that we looked at, they were heavily corroded. They were not operational, to also timelessly try to address issues of flood and flow control of water so that to have avoided the drowning of the houses because of the water that had, gone over the levels. So this was an eye-opener for us, that the fact that infrastructure is not adequately managed and adequately maintained. There's a possibility that there's many other critical infrastructure throughout the country that is important for disaster management that is not being adequately addressed. So that we noted, and we've also put it in our reports to say that this is indeed a problem, and municipalities should really, in the disaster management risk management strategy, put part of this with that the infrastructure that is important for disaster management control needs to be prioritized to accommodate the current climate change conditions. As a department also, that we use a model that we call the Local Government Management Improvement Model, which aims to diagnose management practices in municipalities to look at the various key performance standards, moving from governance to planning to basic services delivery. And for this sector or for this presentation, we just decided to zoom in key performance standards that relate to the water sector. And of the 22 municipalities that were assessed during the 2020-21 financial year, actually, it was during the 21-22 financial year, however, the evidence documents were related to the 2020-21 financial year, is that when we look at the key performance standard that relates to water and sanitation services, many of the municipalities focused on expanding access to water services, and this has come to the expense of repairs and maintenance. As I had also earlier indicated, against the performance plan, that we might be seeing investment in new infrastructure. However, the existing infrastructure is being neglected, and this has been evident through the assessment of these municipalities. So the redirection of funding to poorly and underfunded operations or maintenance is really increasing the service failures. We also looked at the performance of these municipalities against the MUSA, and most of these municipalities were sitting at a high to extremely high vulnerability index. So basically, this says that most of these municipalities are not able to achieve or to meet the standards that they are being assessed by. So that is also a threat. And we're just giving a picture of what we are seeing again when we go on the ground and assess a sample of these municipalities. And the binding constraints, some of these things that are creating constraints into the sector, the dysfunctionality of water boards, the issues around governance, where we've seen instability at executive and board management. And when there's the governance issues, obviously these also translate in the underperformance of other key performance areas. And in our analysis of water boards, we also looked into a research paper that was done by Ngobeni and Breton Bach in 2021, which looked at the efficiency of water boards across South Africa. And this came with very interesting findings to show that only 3 of the 9 water boards, Overberg, Rand, Water and Umgeni, were assessed to be technically efficient. And 4 variables were used to assess this, the efficiency of these water boards. It's against the expenditure, the budget that they receive, the bulk water tariff setting, water losses, and volume sold. And 6 of these small water boards have shown high levels of inefficiency, with wastage in expenditure of 3.7 billion assessed against those, the 18-19 audited annual reports. And the service of water and sanitation as a business has for a long time not been feasible. As per the assessment of this research, water resources severely underpriced and the cost recovery is not being achieved. So clearly there are problems with the tariff setting and the water boards are not able to recover the cost of providing the water service to the municipalities and communities. There's high operating expenditure and poor cash flow results, which obviously end up in ineffective or poor maintenance of the water supply infrastructure. This table in front of us is just to now give an indication of what I have earlier spoken to versus those four variables that the water boards were measured against. So on the far right, you see the technical efficiency score. A score of one basically represents that these are the best performing water boards when measured against those four variables. And a score of less than one implies that the water board is not performing as well as its efficient peers. So you will see there one in the green over Bergrand Water and Umgeni. Sidibeng Water has been the lowest in terms of the efficiency, technical efficiency score. So it's critical that water boards need to conduct a detailed review of the expenditure and operational costs, benchmarking it against the efficient water boards, particularly because cost recovery is a problem, and that means that the water boards will not be financially viable to carry out the business. Consider the issue again of these smaller water boards that are not able to operate effectively. It's important that we consider merging the smaller to medium-sized water boards to make them more optimal and to in order to achieve the efficiency. In line with these findings, we have seen that DWS has indeed started to initiate the realignment of water boards and has proposed the disestablishment of CDB. So we know that that is in progress, and again, it was looking at other water boards that are also not operating optimally. The recommendations we put to the portfolio committee on water and sanitation is to support the issue of investment in critical infrastructure across three spheres of government, ensuring that the allocated capital expenditure budgets are indeed spent on those identified projects as had been planned in the performance plans. DWS to establish mechanisms to address the backlog on the maintenance and refurbishment of critical infrastructure across the board. So obviously that has an impact on the reliability of water and sanitation provision. DWS, in collaboration with the DCOG and MISA, to support the urgent need for municipalities to address issues around water leaks, water losses, and, you know, to address issues on water pressure as well. DWS to ensure water and sanitation supply management by monitoring the Blue Drop and Green Drop program. So we have seen a kickoff in these programs, and we just want to encourage the department to continue with this, but more importantly, now working on addressing the deficiencies that have been seen through the outcomes of those assessments. DWS to fast track the implementation of the National Water and Sanitation Master Plan that is critical to address issues around water security in South Africa. Lastly, to support the efficiency of water boards, we propose that DWS should explore institutional realignment through the rationalization and merging of less optimal water boards into larger regional utilities to unlock expansion of services. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I want to take it back to you, Chair, but I just wanted to say in a nutshell that to confirm that I requested that several reports be sent to you in support to our presentation, Honorable Chair, so that we can share information and to also indicate to the portfolio committee that there's a lot of information which is available, which we know we have put in the website. But for this one, I requested that the sector report, the full sector report be submitted on water and sanitation from our perspective, the priority five report where this sector contribute. You know, that priority five is about special integration, human source, human settlement and the water and sanitation, as well as the composite report, the consolidated MTSF report, which gives you a glimpse of the seven priorities of government, so that we can see how this department fits into the broader sector as well as to the broader priority and the broader MTSF and the broader NDP. So that is what I wanted to find out, if those reports have been made available, which I asked that to be sent. Thanks very much, Chair and Committee. Thank you.
Yeah, we did receive quite a lot of information from your department, and I'm not sure whether it might suffice. But I think if there is none that we have not found, members will indicate, and I'm sure they will be sent for purposes of reference moving forward. Thank you very much. And I think, as I said earlier on, we are not bad in time. I think we just try to work towards us meeting our commitment. Colleagues, there we are. I will want to see hands on the podium. I see the hand of that Hanif Hendricks is up. The hand of Mayor Rebecca Mutlala is up. That's only the two. That Hendricks.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Honorable Chair, thank you very much for that insightful report. The recommendations, the nation has taken note of some very solid recommendations. I just want to comment on one of the recommendations, and that is the need for more investment in infrastructure. And I want to use the example of Bushbuck Ridge, where there is over 60 kilometer asbestos pipe that people access water from. Further, that asbestos pipe needs, for example, to be replaced. We cannot allow an asbestos pipe to poison a whole community like Bushbuck Ridge. Also, we know that in Bushbuck Ridge, the deputy president installed water meters and stands in every yard, but not a drop of water gets there. So there's something wrong with the infrastructure. 3 years ago, the deputy president, when he was in charge, installed that. So infrastructure is very important, and we know that as a result of poor infrastructure, I think, and you may rule me out of order now, Mr. Chairman, because you live in that area, every household in Bushbuck Ridge extract water from that asbestos pipe without paying for it. We cannot put in infrastructure and people don't pay. So there, earlier on, we heard that municipalities do not make the cut. And water is constitutional, right? People must have access to water, but Al-Jamaa is going to change that constitution when the opportunity comes. People must have a right to water, because you yourself, Mr. Chairman, said that every minister, except the last minister, because he inherited all of this, and the previous one who took everyone to court, must fall on their swords for violating the constitution, not carrying out their mandate. And the portfolio committees before us, they must also apologize to the nation for not doing proper oversight. I hope this committee and they've shown that they are going to do it, will do proper oversight to once and for all give meaning to what the Constitution says, that people have a right to have a right to access to water. And in South Africa, in many villages, and I've been to 9 villages, they don't have access to water, and they're going to compete with animals to get water. That is not right. And we thank the report, and such report is necessary to bring about a necessary change. Congratulations. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
No, thanks so much, Chairperson. I've got just a few questions to the...
I didn't get that. Could you try again?
Department of... let me switch off my Siri. Okay. Yeah, I've got a few questions to the Department of... the Department dealing with monitoring and... evaluations. So my question, Chairperson, is, has the department undertaken any case study on monitoring and evaluating the use of district development model, which was before touted as one of the possible solutions to deal with challenges associated with concurrent functions and intergovernmental relations? Chairperson, my question is, has water and sanitation, my other question on that matter is, has water and sanitation utilized the DDM as water and sanitation concurrency functions, have had huge challenges in service delivery and sustainable infrastructure development? So the next question to the department dealing with monitoring and evaluation is, although they maintain that they are assessing performance for 2021-22 financial year, their graphs only reflect 2020 figures. Where is their quarterly monitoring and assessment of the Department of Water and Sanitation work for this financial year? The next question, Chair, is how is this department, which is dealing with monitoring and evaluation, monitor and evaluate information provided to them by the department? As it appears on their report, they merely report on information provided by the different departments without verifying. It seems like they are working on the report from the department without even verifying whether that information is correct or not. On the issue of water board, the same, I'm going to direct this question also to the department dealing with monitoring and evaluation. Why are they not using Auditor General and National Treasury as evidence documents for the assessment of water boards? As this section is a generalized selective input from various sources, but not directly from annual performance plan and annual reports of the affected entities. Why no engagement looking at targets and indicators identified in strategic plans and annual performance plan to gauge reliable evidence? Lastly, Chairperson, is the question to the Auditor General. The presentation highlights that in many instances, the material irregularities far exceeded those currently reflected in your final audit. Only after the Auditor General picked up these discrepancies and requested changes to be effected, did the Department of Water and Sanitation receive an unqualified with some finding. How sustainable is this approach? As it shows many internal challenges
that need to be rectified. Thank you.
Thanks, Ma'am Zala. I think please understand the members to be asking questions, not making statements, because it is important that they ask these questions in order for them to formulate their views when we meet the department in order to make statements. But these are questions really to be answered if we are misconstruing your presentation. Correct us in order for us not to go and create views from wrong perceptions. And I want to take note that indeed, especially on the Auditor General's findings, very important. Just inform us where we are. For instance, we have missed quite a number of targets. If it's some of them, the department put a little bit more of what the target is expected to do, but still they did not meet those particular targets. The fact that you are giving us that information to empower us to debate with the department when they come, I'm sure that's very important. I don't see any other hand here. So I'm asking that, yes.
Oh, it's
no, no, I... Can you raise your hand?
I did, Chair.
Where? Well, raise Solomon Daily. So is Allah. Yeah.
Check, and my hand is up.
I don't see that. But fine, let's talk. Your name is here. It is not raising its hand.
And mine is too. Its hand is up, Chair.
But why are your things not showing your hands?
They were agitated, sir. They did not raise any hands. Only now their hands are up.
Oh, you admit
the presenters to respond, then they can come. Because they did not raise their hands. They waited for us to speak first, and then they speak afterwards.
And
they realized that, hey, I can speak now.
Now, thanks very much, Chair, and let me also appreciate the presentation by the Office of the Auditor General and the DPME. And also appreciate, Chair, the work done by Water Research Commission, and also in terms of their performance getting the clean audit. We appreciate that, and also the performance of DWS and TCTA. You'd remember that we have been struggling with regard to the internal controls and all these performance, financial performance with regard to the two, especially DWS. But at least this year, this financial year, I think there's a great improvement, Chair. As much as there are still challenges on the ground, but I think there is progress, and definitely going forward, they will get unqualified audit without findings. Chair, just want to get clarity from the two, be it your AG or the DPME, with regard to the budget eradication program. You know, it has been there. This is one of the targets that has been there for quite some time, and it looks like we are not moving. And as much as the department has committed themselves that they will complete this target next year around March, but I just want to get the view of the DPME and the Auditor General, because definitely when they audit or when they monitor, they go on the ground. Do we see some progress in terms of this target? Are they going to meet this target next year, March, of eradicating the budget system in our country or in the two provinces? But then secondly, I just want to get the view of the DPME on the targets that are set by DWS. There was a slide that talks to DWS setting targets which are higher than in the MTSF. Are they not setting themselves to a failure? Because most of the targets are not reached. And what is the reason for setting those targets? I think the AG can also respond to that. On the other issue, I just want clarity on I think it was Auditor General, the slide presented by Auditor General, on the Umzimvubu project. They indicated that an amount of 15 billion was allocated to this project, but 131 million has been spent, but there was no value for money. I just want information, detailed information regarding this information that you are giving to us. On the war on leaks, what is your comment? Because government has spent a lot of money training students, and as we are speaking, they are still at home. I just want to hear your view with regard to how can we as government make sure that we absorb or we assist municipalities to absorb these young people to deal with the leaks that are there in our country or in different municipalities. Because it means that there was no value for money in terms of the money that we have spent to train these young people who are, as you're speaking, roaming around the streets, unemployed, but they have received this training from our government. On the last matter, I think I'm fine. Okay. On the issue of investigations, Chair, the AG is raising a note to say there's a need for the department to fast-track the investigations. But my challenge is that most of the investigations within DWS are referred to law enforcement agencies, your SIU, SIP, and so forth and so forth. So I just want to get their view on how, is there any other way where the department can be able to fast track these investigations besides waiting for law enforcement agencies to conclude the matter? Thank you very much.
Yeah, what is Nancy?
Chair, thank you very much. Good morning, Chairperson.
Took me just call himself raise his hand.
I will try. Can you see that my hand is up even now? I see it. I don't know. What's the problem? Maybe I have to go to that school.
We
thank
can't
you,
see your hand at all.
We
can't see your hand at all. I can't see it.
I can't see it. I can't see it myself, Honorable Basson.
I will go to that. Those glasses, Chair. I need them.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
It's important to appreciate a report from both institutions which make a clear assessment on how the department is progressing with all its challenges. But where I like it most is when it comes with some recommendations to be considered by the department and by the portfolio committee. Just few areas on the AG, Chair. AG has noted the issue of complexity on working with municipalities as a national department, which is the issue of concurrence. The question perhaps is raised by Honorable Mkhale that does AG believe that the DDM model could be able to assist and come closer to the municipality functions and the oversight role of the national department. What is AG's view, having seen the objectives of the development model? The second issue is the pain that AG is raising about the delays and the non-implementation of the bucket eradication, given the targets that we have put for the past few years and up to now. I was waiting in the recommendation, perhaps a very strategic recommendation that AG could present to us, because as a department in us, this is a critical area that we would like to address. I must say that both AG and DPME has raised the concern about this area. Perhaps having they analyzed the areas of weaknesses and challenges, what is their view about the delays on this particular service delivery? The issue of infrastructure project delays, I think it has been raised, and there are recommendations that I don't want to tamper with. There's a very critical area. I'm happy that is raised by structures like yourselves, DPME and AG, of a silo mentality within governance structures of government. National Treasury, COGTA, SALGA, and some other entities that should work together to support departments. I wanted to hear a recommendation on that, because maybe if an intervention could be made by yourselves, you could be heard, because I think this issue has been raised many a times. Wesalga speaks this, National Journal speaks this, and they don't speak together. That silo mentality, please tell us, are you entering that space for them to assist, because they are supporting departments. Without them, we can't succeed. The other issue, I think it's related to what Mama Grace has raised, Honorable Grace has raised, that there's value created in Zimbabwe. That's what the presenter is saying. But there's a huge overpayment in that. We made an oversight there. We were curious to see huge amount of money that went to a road access. We're asking, what has got road access to do with the river? We saw it. But one of the issues that was a key in the process is that how does the development of the river is going to unfold, where a lot of money is going to be utilized? Is this overpayment on the second phase out of the road access on the river, on the dam that we want to see? Perhaps a clarity would need to be given to that. There's a very clear proposal. There's a clear proposal by the DPME, an analysis about our water boards. Six of them are very inefficient. They are in red. six of them. Remember, Chair, huge amounts of money are being deposited to those water boards as entities to support the department. And this is painful to listen to. But there's a proposal, which I am not sure if it's going to assist us, that the department should consider realignment and rationalization for bigger boards. Now, how do you make them bigger for them to perform when at a small level they could not perform? Perhaps a clarity would need to be given on that. The last one, Chair, is the issue of the DPME. DPME in your analysis and assessment of the department, do you have internal monitoring structures? Do you believe that the department has got departmental internal monitoring structures that are assisting the department before you come? And are you working with those? Do you feel that there's a link and they are assisting the department? Those are the few areas that I wanted to raise, Chair. Thank you very much.
Let's start with Auditor General. Questions that were related to yourself, that you are able to answer to do.
Thank you, Chair. I will start with the questions, and my colleague Tendani will assist me on some of them. I'm hoping that I have captured them correctly. The first question was around the material corrections to the financial statements. The member had noted that there were changes that needed to be done as part of the audit process, and indicated that this shows many internal challenges that need to be addressed. Thank you, Chair. I think that is correct. The observation that is noted is very correct. We are concerned across the three entities, DWS, WTE, and TCTA, that the material errors are noted not just in this year, but in prior years as well. For the department, the issues around the errors identified related to many of the disclosure items that support the financial statements. We've noted that there are manual processes in place to report on some of the key components of the financial statements, being your commitments, accruals, payables. This is a challenge, I think, affecting government as a whole for departments, because there isn't an information system that supports this. However, with the manual systems that are in place, it is important for the department to ensure that it has sufficient controls in place to identify errors and to correct them before the submission of the financial statements. And that is the recommendation that we've made to the department, noting that for the department, you know, these are repeat findings. So that is correct. With respect to WTE, the issues around material errors related to PPE, again, a repeat issue. We noted that, there was inadequate reviews of the financial statements. We also noted that the action plans that had been developed to address our audit findings of the prior year were not addressed appropriately, again, resulting in the repeat findings. I also wanted to highlight that we have also indicated for the WTE that one of the issues that that the entity has with respect to reporting is the unsupported figures that come through in respect of the Lesotho Highlands project. Information for that comes through very late, which again impacts on adjustments that need to be made to the financial statements. So that is an area that we've also recommended to management and to leadership, that there needs to be some further negotiations to get reliable information from them in a timely manner. The second question that I have for us relates to the bucket eradication program. The question that we have is whether, as the AGSA, do we see some progress? Are they going to make their targets? There was also a second question that came through around the delays and the non-implementation of the bucket eradication program. And the question was around, you know, what are the strategic recommendations that the AGSA should make? Have we investigated reasons for the delay and made recommendations for that? So in answering that question, the bucket eradication program was not a specific selection for the year under review. When we audited the RBIC projects, we had selected a sample, and that program was unfortunately not part of that sample. However, when we audit on a sample basis and we identify findings, we usually find that the issues that we identify tend to be you know, matters that will consistently appear across all of the projects. So even though we have specifically referred to the projects that we have tested, the recommendations that we make around the RBIC projects and recommendations that we made around the life cycle reviews that we've spoken about will be very relevant to this project as well. So hopefully the department in implementing the recommendations that we make will look at all of the projects that they are busy with to ensure that they are appropriately you know, tracking those projects, that they identify root causes for delays that have been identified, and that they will then have an action plan to address that. So indirectly, I'm saying that there were recommendations that were made on the project, but there were no recommendations that were specifically made on this project because we didn't select those. On the issue of... there was a question that I believe was also directed to us as the AG, was on the reasons for setting targets higher than the MTSF. In terms of the review that we performed, we did look at the requirements of the MTSF. From our perspective, those represented the minimum targets that needed to be achieved. And we were measuring the department against the minimum requirements. The fact that they set higher targets, I'm not exactly sure why they would have done that. It might have been due to an understanding of the particular circumstances or their own assessment of what is required. So I don't have a specific reason as to why the targets set were higher. We were just measuring minimum requirements on that. There was a question around the worn leaks. How can we assist the process with respect to the employment of the learners that have received training under the project? So with the worn leaks, I think that the committee is aware, yes, there's been a significant investment in the training of the individuals, but as part of the audit process, we have identified that when the contract was, or when the project was started, it was actually started back in 2016 already, and at that time, the department had expected that learners will be trained and that they will be absorbed into municipalities. However, there was no agreement at that point with the municipalities to arrange for these municipalities to employ these learners as soon as they were completed their training in this respect. So that was a weakness in the project. There wasn't an MOA that was signed that would have assisted with the employment of these learners.
We have also requested from the department an impact assessment to understand how many of the learners were employed, so that we can understand what the impact was of the learning and the investment in the training against the actual water losses. And we understand that this impact assessment was not done by the department, and our understanding is also that there was not a formal process to now integrate these learners into formal employment at the municipalities. As to whether the department will continue to do that, I'm not sure. I think that is something that maybe the department can assist with in terms of their plans for the learners that have been trained, but we did identify on our side and report on the weaknesses that we've identified there. There was a question related to the need to fast-track investigations. The member had asked, whether investigations need to be done by the SIU or any other law enforcement agency to conclude on the matters relating to irregular expenditure. And while it's true that there are various investigations that are currently in progress relating to various matters at the department, when we talk to the investigations that are required for consequence management, it is not necessary that it needs to be carried out by a law enforcement agency. An investigation can be done internally as well. With the department, they are currently using a unit that resides within the internal audit section. So they have an investigations unit that is responsible for conducting investigations on various matters. So a lot of the irregular expenditure matters that are under investigation are being done by this unit in the department, which is appropriate. And that way we had reported that there were some delays in these investigations that was then impacting on the ability of the department to implement consequence management processes. Okay, there was a question on silo mentality within national entities. I think we appreciate that comment. It's something that has come through quite strongly in our presentation as well. So the question was, how can we as the AGSA assist? How can we assist the department to get more assistance from the entities that we've identified as being coordinating entities or that can assist with service delivery improvements? So maybe in terms of our plan, I think for the 21-22 year, we are looking at the different levels of government that's responsible for the water sector. For this round, we've pretty much looked at the PFMA round with the department and its entities. As part of our audit process, we also look at water boards. The water board audits are currently in progress. So, we'll continue to look at the challenges that are experienced on their level. Noting that for the last year, we had already prepared and tabled a water board report. And with the MFMA audits that are also currently in place, we will also include certain specific water sector procedures so that we can also identify service delivery challenges on that level. The idea with the audit work that we will do across these phases in government is that we want to prepare a water sector report that will be finalized next year. And in looking at the different phases of government and then the challenges experienced from the AGSA side, we will be taking those findings and recommendations to the supporting departments as well. We will be presenting them with findings with the objective of also getting their input in terms of their responsibilities and how they can assist them, the department, to ensure that there's proper performance monitoring of the municipalities. So it is something that we're planning, and we're hoping that when we are able to speak to you again earlier, or maybe next year, that we would have gone through the process of looking at all the phases of the audit, and that we would have also engaged with the coordinating departments relating to service delivery matters. Thank you, Chair. I think I will hand over to Tendani to assist with the questions on the Amazon Google project. Thank you, Tendani.
I'm William Zumbu Tendani, and I was going to represent the report again.
Okay. Thank you. Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. My colleague indicated, I will then be responding on the questions that were raised on the Umzimvu and also the Hazelmere Dam project. In terms of the Umzimvu,
Chairperson, my apologies, Tendani. Tendani, the presenter is facing ups and downs.
It's scary.
It's scaring.
It's scary.
Here, Tendani. Here, do you need classes too? Just like mom's try. I'm still facing the other way around.
My apologies. Apologies.
Where are you, Tendani? I want to enjoy what they are saying. Where do they see you, Tendani? I want to enjoy it also.
Tendani, can you open it?
Yeah, okay.
Okay, my apologies, Chair and members. I am not sure what's happening. I'm just trying to... Okay, right. It should be fine now. Members, can you see?
Much better.
Ah, perfect now.
Okay, all right. Hey, technology. Okay, yeah. Like I said, I will be responding to the Umzimvubu question on why has the cost inflated by 131 million? Honorable Chair and members, we picked up on this issue in the 2021 year's audit, wherein we identified that we were given an inception report on the project. And in terms of that report, it had detailed cost breakdowns which are aligned to the deliverables, and that's still in the planning stage of the audit, because that's where the project, because that's where the project is. So what we then did is we then compared that inception report against what the professional service provider has already built, and we identified that the costs that we built for planning the activities in terms of the planning of the project, such as your design of the project, the costs which were built were already higher than what was agreed to in terms of the inception report. So we then raised the issue, and the total amount which was the difference between the inception report and what was then built and paid to the professional service provider was 131 million. Management acknowledged this, and they have since halted the planning of the project, and they are performing an investigation into this to just then ensure that these overpayments are addressed before the project continues. And in terms of your Hazelmere project, we also identified these issues in the prior year's audit, and we then actually raised a material irregularity in this issue. It is the irregularity which relates to your site re-establishment cost and also spending time on the project. So what happened is the way delays in terms of procurement of load cells for that project, and these delays you know, resulted in this spending time fees, and as and when time progressed, the contract came to an end, and it was not extended, which meaning then that the contractor then terminated that contract, and then there were then, you know, costs in terms of having the contractor to come back to the project, because then the contract was then reopened, the contractor needed then to come back to the project, including the consultant. So there were costs there. And when they had to come back to the project, there were site re-establishment costs, meaning, you know, when that contract was terminated, they then took their construction equipment from the site. So that site had to be re-established again. So there were site re-establishment costs, and those costs for spending time while awaiting for the procurement of the permanent load cells. So there were costs relating to spending time, which were then paid. So this then resulted in the in this increase in the project costs. So that is basically the reasons for the increase in the cost of these two projects. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
But if you have terminated your contract and you've taken your things away from the construction site, why do you think that you are standing? You understand? You might be doing other business somewhere else. You're not standing. Why should we be paying you standing when you are not standing? You're working somewhere else. But it's fine. We'll talk to it later than that. But this man was not standing. He was working somewhere. He took his luggage and he worked somewhere. Why must he punish us?
Yeah, so sorry, Chair. So sorry, Honorable Chair. Maybe I must just clear that. So the spending time was actually incurred before the contract was terminated. So the procurement of the load cells took quite a significant amount of time before even the contract came to an end. It came to an end while the procurement of those permanent load cells had not yet been made, which then led to the contractor leaving the site.
Okay. Okay, DPME?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I will start with some of the questions that have been asked, and I will then hand over to the DDG and the acting head of our unit. So to first start with a question relating to whether the DPME has undertaken a case study on the DPME, particularly looking into the concurrency of functions in the water and sanitation sector. As the DPME, we are involved in various projects throughout, you know, the oversight departments, COCTA, National Treasury, that are basically overseeing the implementation of the DDM. So we find ourselves in various platforms that speak to the implementation of the DDM. Now, part of the work that we have been doing, so various units in the DPME do various kinds of work to support the implementation of the DDM. As we have, we are supporting our Deputy Minister in the Presidency, Bingi Kekana, in the work that she's doing around the DDM in the Fezile-Dabi district. Now, that is one area that we have been focused, one district that we have been focused in, and as she is the political champion again in that district, to basically oversee whether the implementation of the DDM indeed is going according to plan. So what happens in that one of our units has already undertaken a study on the one plan of the district. So now in the one plan, you will understand that it looks at various projects within that district that are meant to be undertaken in that particular district. So it's projects relating to health, relating to water and sanitation, related to electricity. So it's across board.
So what we do is that in those steering committees, part of the steering committees involve the national sector departments. They also involve the provincial sector departments, including the Office of the Premier. So to ensure that indeed to bring in together that intergovernmental relations, that all the parties that are meant to take part in the implementation of the DDM are involved, and they are a way of, you know, of you know, basically involving each other in identifying projects and exactly where they're going to be implemented. So to speak now to water and sanitation, indeed through that process, projects of the water and sanitation sector have been extrapolated from the Department of Water and Sanitation, and also now it has been brought down to a district level to understand exactly where the focus will be. So that's the work that we are doing around the district development model. We have also, in part in our media review report, we have also incorporated a portion of that work that that is done through our deputy minister in that particular district. But also within our specific unit, I spoke earlier in my presentation to the local government management improvement model, where we also went into that district to basically undertake an assessment throughout those municipalities to see where they stand within the water and services, water and sanitation services, you know, to understand, to also inform our deputy minister that in this particular area, these are the struggles and what we need to do to engage on addressing those struggles in that area. So that's basically to address that and to also explain how the concurrency of functions now is put together, particularly in this respect. To answer the question relating to the graphs that speak to 2020, these graphs have been, let me start off like this. We have indicated when we introduced our presentation that our methodology and approach is to use various sources of data. Yes, we have our internal processes where we collect data directly from the department, where we also do site visits, as I have indicated on some of the visits that we have done in the presentation. But we also, to give a comprehensive view of what's happening in the sector, we collect information from various institutions. And I have indicated at the start of our methodology and approach that we use information from research institutions. We use our internal research institutions as well, your SAFSA, your CSIR, to provide information. And indeed, we do depend on that information so that we know that it is reliable, it is accurate, and it has been validated. So that information for the 2020 year, it was published in the 2021 financial year. So that's how that essay works in performing the general household survey. They conduct the work in that particular year, and it gets published in the next year. So it is relevant for the period, the reporting period that we are speaking to. On the monitoring of our work, where DPME gets involved, we do get involved in various projects. It will not be all projects, you know, due to issues of capacity, but there are selected projects that we find ourselves in to also have an understanding and to, you know, validate what we are being told and being reported by the department. And one of the latest projects that we have been partly involved in, and we will be also attending the launch later this month of this, it's the Olifant Management Model, which is meant to be launched in Limpopo, Beaufort, where it looks at the provision of potable water and sanitation in areas of Limpopo that are severely affected by water challenges. So we do identify projects with the Department of Water and Sanitation in collaboration with them, where we say that we will be on the ground, we will be monitoring, we will be seeing whether these projects indeed are being implemented. So we use various forms of validating the work that we report to our processes. On the issue of the water boards, why didn't we consult with National Treasury and AG on that information? I also want to go back again to the issue of triangulating information, you know. The reason why we brought that, it's not that we disregard work done by the National Treasury, done by the AG. No, in fact, in some of the budget steering committees that we sit in, issues of the water board do come up, especially particularly around the rising date of municipalities owing to the water boards. So we do sit, even in our reports, we do also report on issues around water boards with information retrieved from the National Treasury. So that relationship there is there, it's existing, and it is reported in our biannual reports. However, in this presentation, it was just to bring a perspective of other research mechanisms that have been done to look into the efficiency of water boards. We know that the water boards have been struggling over the many years. Those are issues that have been discussed within the structures of government from time to time. And obviously solutions are being, sourced in trying to address that. So just to answer that, we do engage with the National Treasury around these issues. On the bucket eradication program, whether there's possibility of that target being achieved. The department has put together a bucket eradication plan, and they have given us that the towns that they will be focusing on in the next 2 years in the Northern Cape and the Free State. So I think it's 6 towns all in all that they will be focusing on. And I think the issue, what they have also reiterated in our meetings with them, is that the focus over the past 2 years was to make sure that there is bulk infrastructure constructed, over the years, so that then they are able to put in the top structures in time. So in our latest engagement with them in, I think a month ago, they had also reiterated that the bulk infrastructure is at various levels of completion. And through this plan, the 6 towns that have been planned to be attended to, they will be addressed in the next 2 years. So obviously continuous monitoring of that work will tell us whether indeed are we really looking at this target being achieved in time. And I think I have addressed most of the questions. I will hand over to the head of our unit in case she wants to add some of the aspects of
it can't be 2 years. The commitment is that they will be finished by March 2023. So it can't be 2 years. It should not be 2 years. You must not allow 2 years to be the answer. March 2023.
Okay, hear you say. But I was speaking in relation to the MTSF. So, because the MTSF goes up to March 2024. So that's where our focus was in relation to the MTSF. Thank you.
Don't generalize the bucket system. The bucket system is an item that we are focusing on in the three regions, Free State, Northern Cape and Northwest. It must be finished by March 2023. When you oversight them and you monitor them, it must be against that time frame. Nothing more than that.
Your point is taken too. Thank you.
Bring us to.
Thank
you. Good morning, Honorable Chair. I'm trying to switch on my video. Okay, let me not waste time. I don't know. It's not.
Your video is on, ma'am. Your video is on. Continue.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good morning, Honorable Members. My name is Kifiwe Sithwabane. I'm the acting head of the unit, local government and human settlements within DPME. I'm going to add on the response as raised by the honorable members. I'm going to start with the comment from the honorable Hendricks with regard to the asbestos pipe. We have noted this point as you have alluded to it. We will then what call make a follow up with the office of the deputy president to ensure that this matter is being attended. Then on the point that has been mentioned by Honorable Musala on the issue of the where is what called the quota monitoring monitoring results, I will focus on that. Every quarter, what called the departments, they submit what called the performance on the system that is called what's called quarterly report, quarterly reports. Then, in terms of incorporating the what's called the quarterly reports, as we work on the what's called biannually what's called reports, we do make what's called a reference to that report when we compile our reports. Then on the point of the APP, as the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation, we do what call work with the National Treasury when the departments they submit their annual performance plans. We do the analysis and also to check in terms of what call the alignment with the APP, the alignment of the APP and the MTA and the MTSF. The National Treasury focuses more in terms of looking if the budget supports the plans or the indicators that targets that needs to be achieved for that particular financial year. Honorable Sekhe Grace, yes. On the issue of war on leaks, where the students were trained. This matter we once raised also as DPME with the Department of Water and Sanitation, and their response, it was that, yes, the training was conducted, but the challenge is with the, what called it, with the placement. As the municipality, they are the ones that are supposed to employ the trained, what call as students. But we will again also make a follow up with the what call with the department, and also that there must be a what call some talks between water and sanitation as well as the municipalities. Then okay, on the from the question that was raised by Honorable Sishwai on the DPME, do we have internal monitoring structures? Yes, within DPME, yes, we are what called a small department with a few what call staff. We do what call work as the officials appointed by the department to do the monitoring what call the monitoring function within the branch of sector monitoring. We don't have what called the assistance maybe from like a consultant from external who does what called the work. The all work that is being reported is done by the few staff members that are employed by the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation. Then I would also lastly like to add the issue on the water boards. Last year, as the department, we did compile a report with regard to the water boards that were not performing, but more the focus of the report, of which I think we can share that report. It was focusing more on the debt, as we were also trying to engage with the department. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much.
Let me come in conclusion, Chair. Thank you very much. I'm the DDG. I'm concluding.
Okay.
I'm wrapping up, Chair. Thank you very much for the opportunity. I believe the team has already covered most of the, if not all of the questions as I was tracking them. I just wanted to add one or two in terms from the management perspective. Some of the things we might not be aware of, for example, with the DDM model, we are in the presidential steering committee with the DCOC and many other departments, you know, working together on the issues of the one plan as well as the monitoring framework, which have just been completed, and how we're going to take this forward. I'm trying to address the issue of the case studies, if we've done those. We were party to the case studies which were done with COCTA, because we have realized that on our own one department, you know, it doesn't work. The silo mentality is not working. Over and above that, what is currently happening is that as a group, the whole of that group, we are working through the DBSA, Development Bank of South Africa. Now we've moved from the case studies to the evaluation of the DDM model based on the three pilots which we have done, you know, we have already implemented, so that those lessons can be used when we are now institutionalizing this model across the country. So that on our side, you know, to add to that, you know, the issues of rapid assessments, which we are also in bringing in, and we will move more into them with our evaluation unit, you know, going forward, you know, to add to the principle of this integrated monitoring and evaluation principle we are trying to apply. We use many lenses looking at one problem, so that at least it is we use different lenses as well as different information to help us with the validation of the information which we use. And verification is key to monitoring. We do verify and make sure that what we report, we have seen it, we have verified it, and it's the truth as we know it. You know, in terms of the silo mentality, I think I've talked about that. You know, what I want to bring here is the decision which was made by the cabinet that departments and clusters must work together. So on that decision, so we issued letters to the ministers, minister to minister, to co-chairs of clusters, and you know, to the DGs about the issues of you know, coordination amongst themselves, you know, removing the silos and integration. So because you know, one sector can work on its own, so there are many other things which you know impedes, which are not necessarily within that sector, but impedes implementation in that sector. So this silo mentality is not working. You know, we've realized it, and then we're trying to break that one. you know, the DDM model is one of those in terms of the three spheres of government. In our case, we are saying no, these clusters and the departments must work together on for the same cause, because they interfere in each other, they integrate, and so that coordination must happen. So we have we've got an improvement plan which we have submitted for based on those recommendations to this groups of people, the ministers, the clusters, and the departments, and we are now following them up in terms of reporting. So the first reports will be coming. Is it on the 14th? Is this week? We will be receiving the first report in terms of that kind of that coordination, the breaking up of the clusters. With this few words, I think we've covered most of the areas, unless I've missed something, which I would also cover. Thank you very much for the opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. We have come to the end of the presentation. Where are we, Mr. Paul?
Adoption of the program, Chairperson.
DPME and AXA, if you want to leave the meeting, you can. It is now the committee to adopt this one program. Thank you very much for your time, and we wish you well in what you are doing. We wish we meet again. The program
thank you very
is
much.
Thanks a lot. The program is being presented before us. It is looking the 11th of February, which was today. We are meeting again at 2 today, later. Again on Friday.
On Thursday, Thursday, Chairperson, at 2 o'clock.
Oh, yeah. On Thursday at 2 o'clock.
There's a huge noise. Can you be assisted? Yo. The Chairperson stands around. Please, Chair, please.
I'm sitting somewhere in the bush, so nobody can make noise here.
It's okay. It is you
who's
making noise.
It is snakes and birds. I'm in the bush. So, is this the program of only what today and Friday and Thursday? Yes. The other one is again on Tuesday, the 18th, and Friday is the Thursday again. I can't see. I'm going to mislead a lot. Okay.
Tuesday,
the 18th of October, Tuesday the 25th, Friday the 28th, the 27th, which is Thursday, we are leaving for Limpopo and we're coming back on the 30th of October. Then the program is on the 1st of November and it ends there on the 22nd of November. 29th of November, yeah. Okay. Let me hear you. Whoever wants to speak on the program. Let me see.
We are fine, Chair, with the program.
Thanks, Meseke. Any second to that? Can I second? Because no one is seconding.
Agreed.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'm sure the following item will then be the closing remarks, Lucipo.
Yes, Chairperson, and also the next meeting is today at 2 o'clock, briefing by the department and TCTA on the annual reports. Members will use the same link to join that meeting.
Today.
Yes, today at 2 o'clock. Yeah,
just now at 2 o'clock. Let's go for lunch and come back at 2. And we'll be there up until 6 in the evening. So, thank you very much. The meeting is then adjourned.
Sharp, sharp.